Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We're simulcasting here between our video and our audio outlets for podcast and for radio networks and our TV show because this is really an important topic to me. We're going to be talking about the Kennedy assassination, but we're also going to tell you why it's important that we look at it. And our guest is Jim DiEugenio. He's been on a couple times before. We're really glad to have him on. And we're going to ask him why it's still important we find out about this. I've got my reasons too. We're looking here, if you have a video connection, if you don't, that's fine. I'll describe it for you. We're looking here at the cover of Jim's new book. It's called The JFK Assassination Chokeholds, The Inescapably Prove There Was a Conspiracy. No kidding, there was a conspiracy. And unfortunately, here, the fine print here is a little, there we go. We got an endorsement from a man I really respect. Oliver Stone, fascinating glimpse into the accumulating knowledge of the crime and why President Trump and Biden both backed away from full disclosure of JFK files. Aside, I got taken off of YouTube because I pushed the point about the CIA releasing the files, and I raised the question, what do they have to hide? Because just about everybody that was involved with the situation has now passed away, and it cost me my YouTube channel, and that's fine. I hear I'm getting it back though, so we'll see. We'll see
Dave,
if that
that's,
happens.
when I hear that is just so depressing, that
Yeah.
YouTube is doing that, God.
Yeah, I didn't even have a strike, Jim. It's amazing. There was no strike against my account. I was never demonetized. Everything was going along fine. And I know how far I can go. I know you can't talk about the V word. You can't talk about CV19. I know all that when you're on YouTube. But I thought in the 60th anniversary time, the Kennedy assassination was fair game. And I just said, hey, Trump and Biden have not released the JFK files, and by law, they have to be released. We'll get into that with you here in the interview. Before we get too far into this, folks, we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And you know, I have been an advertiser for Noble Gold for 7 years. I've been a customer for six, and I'm worried about the banks. And the Dodd-Frank Law 2010 says they can keep your retirement if it's associated with a bank. They can also keep your savings account, and you're declared to be an unsecured creditor. I think you need to find out more about this and see if there's protective things you can do. If you got a nest egg to protect, let me have you call Noble Gold. They're the best there is to deal with. 877-646-5347. 877-646-5347. All right, we're gonna click this off here and bring Jim up to full screen if you're watching on video. Jim, I'm gonna say this, Jim, and I'm not saying this to flatter you. You are the foremost authority on the Kennedy assassination. Every time I want to go find something out more detail, you are invariably on a video. You're being quoted somewhere. You are undoubtedly the go-to guy on the assassination. So, ladies and gentlemen, we couldn't have a better guest. He's done things with Oliver Stone, Robert Kennedy Jr. He's everywhere and anywhere on this topic. I know he was on Fox News recently with Jesse. And it's just, we're really fortunate to have him. But this is a topic near and dear to my heart. I have been involved in this before I was in media. I used to talk to Kiwanis groups and local Elks clubs and tea parties when they sprung up before I really got going in the media. And because I'm passionate about it, because what went on with Kennedy could happen to any of our presidents. And Jim, I want to ask you this question before we get started. Why is it important that we keep digging for the real truth behind who killed John Kennedy and why and how they covered it up?
I think it goes to the heart of who's running the country. All right. And let me explain a concrete example of this. All right. If you recall when Trump was leaving office, he had made a promise on Twitter. Oh no, excuse me. It was in 2017, not when he was leaving office. It was in 2017. I'm looking forward to declassifying the last of the JFK documents.
I remember.
This was like a week or so before the termination date was up. Everything was supposed to be released in October of 2017. Suddenly, Mike Pompeo and the FBI guys go into Trump's office on the day, on the, and Trump folds. All right. And he sets up this 6-month delay. And then he sets up another 3-year delay that went beyond the election. So Judge Napolitano was on the phone with Trump about a week before he left office because Trump wanted some information on doing some pardons, okay? And so Trump goes, well, thank you so much, Judge. Is there anything I can do for you? And Napolitano says, yes, there is. He says, why did you break your promise to the American people? And Trump goes, what promise did I break? I'll take care of it right now. He says, Donald, you told the American people back in 2017 that you were going to declassify the last of the JFK records. Yes. And you didn't. And you still haven't. And Trump says, Judge, if they would have showed you what they showed me, okay, you would have done the same thing that I did. And Napolitano goes, who is they and what is what? And Trump goes, one day when there's not 20 people listening to me on this telephone, I'll let you know what it was. Okay, and he hung up on him. Now, I'm also pretty sure you probably know about that bombshell program Tucker Carlson did.
Yes.
I think in 2021, where he came out and said the CIA was complicit in the assassination of President Kennedy. And then they had a source that was familiar with the documents. All right. What probably your listeners don't know is this. On the Joe Rogan Experience, Tucker Carlson said the day after that show aired, Mike Pompeo's lawyer called him up and said, it's a crime to reveal classified information to the public, threatening him. Okay. And Carlson goes, wait a minute. You're saying it's more important to keep documents secret than it is for the people to know who killed President Kennedy? So anybody who says that somehow this is a past issue, that somehow, no, it's not. Okay. It plagues our society. It splits the social fabric. It divides people. To this very day, we have not been able to solve this problem. All right. And believe me, there's a lot of reasons why we should, because a lot of things changed right after Kennedy was killed.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Pompeo, you mentioned him, Jim, ex-CIA. I think that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, he was director for 2 years.
I know. He was the guardian of the gate. You know, my feeling was the CIA was involved, but they did so from a distance. They employed assassins and they had plausible deniability and different layers. But at the heart of it, to me, I always thought it was a CIA plot. Do you share that view?
Yes. And I think what they did is they integrated certain other elements. Okay. Like, for example, Cuban exiles. When they had to polish off Oswald, they brought in Ruby, okay, you know, to make it more confusing, you know. It was a very, very clever, clever plot. But the only people who were very much experienced in how to carry out a covert operation could have pulled something like this off.
Yeah, and at the heart of planning, when you look at the planners, Alan Dulles, the scorned, fired CIA director over Bay of Pigs. Mm-hmm. Was he a planner in this? Was he one of the central planners?
Well, what we tried to do in, I don't know if you've seen it, in Oliver Stone's JFK Revisited, the documentary that I wrote for him. Yes. All right. What we tried to do there is posit the idea that Dulles was probably an organizer, okay?
Exactly.
One of the people who was behind the scenes, you know, pulling strings, you know, bringing in somebody to go ahead and be the direct planner. And we showed in that film is that, you know, and again, most people don't know this, but Dallas was not the first attempt to kill Kennedy. Okay, there were in now listen to this, to, you know, keep your hat on. There were two attempts to kill Kennedy that month. Okay, in November. All right. There was one attempt to kill Kennedy in Chicago. I believe it was November 2nd or November 3rd. All right. And then there was another attempt to kill Kennedy in Tampa around the 17th or the 18th. So, in other words, if you put this all together, I mean, I think the clear message is Kennedy is not getting out of 1963 alive. Okay, one way or another, we're getting rid of this guy. All right.
I hear what you're saying, and here's something that always bothered me, Jim. In early November, the Diem brothers were assassinated by forces connected to the CIA because the Diem brothers didn't want U.S. troop involvement. That's my belief. Is the Diem assassination and the Kennedy assassination are they related?
Well, I don't think that they're directly related. Okay, I mean Kennedy was absolutely heartbroken when he heard the news about this. Okay, and he's when he heard the news, he gritted his teeth and walked out of the room. The I in my opinion, and I've done some studying on this, the two guys involved with that murder were Lodge and Conneen. Lodge was the ambassador, okay, just a terrible mistake by Kennedy appointing Henry Cabot Lodge as ambassador.
Right.
And Conneen was the acting CIA station chief, all right? And they essentially snookered the Diem brothers into, as they were trying to escape, Lodge insisted that they keep on calling him. Well, what Diem didn't know is that Lodge was communicating with Conneen, and Conneen was more or less in contact with the conspirators. Okay, and that's essentially how that happened. See, Kennedy knew that the Diem brothers were not going to last. There were just too many rebellions going on. Had they begun in the countryside, they were now, because of the Buddhist crisis. I'm sure your listeners know about that. When Diem began to crack down on the Buddhist demonstrations, and 9 people died, okay, in a demonstration, and like something, and Vietnam was 70% Buddhist, so his government was cracking open, but Kennedy was trying to get him out of there, alive. He even sent an envoy over there, okay. But Diem wouldn't leave, so that was a really tragic situation,
Okay.
you know.
Yeah, but they were both. Kennedy didn't want to commit troops, and the Diem
No,
brothers
well,
didn't
wait
want
a minute.
troops.
That's an understatement. Oh, Kennedy didn't want to commit troops. Kennedy resisted every overture to go. There were 8 of them in 1961 and 1962. He turned down every single one. No, we are not sending combat troops into Vietnam. Because if we send combat troops into Vietnam, it's a white man's war. It becomes our war. And then that will help them recruit the populace, okay? Because it's going to turn into a nationalistic war against imperialism. He understood that. And I don't shouldn't have to tell you this. You probably know this. He understood that because he was there when the same thing happened to France.
Yeah,
All right, in
exactly.
the First Vietnamese War.
Yeah, that led to Dien Bien Phu. Exactly. I mean, Kennedy did know that. And one thing's always admired about him, he was a great student of history. He really had command of history. There's something that I think might be associated with your views on this, and I wanted to bring this up. And it has to do with the impersonation of the accused assassin of Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald.
This, you know something in the book. Okay, we have a special chapter on that by a guy named Matt Crumpton, who's an attorney in Ohio. And I really believe this is one of the best, well, first of all, it's one of the best chapters in the book. But secondly, I believe if it's not the very best examination of that issue, it's up there in the top 2 or 3. Matt centers, he produces evidence for there being upwards of a dozen impersonations of Oswald on the eve of the assassination. Now, and then he concludes it by saying, now, in the whole annals of the history of crime, Has there ever been a murder case where the accused assassin was spotted 12 different times in places he could not have been before the crime was executed? And he says, I doubt it very much. You know, doesn't this indicate that there's somebody, something going on behind the scenes? You know, I mean, just to name a few of them, there's the ones at the target shooting place. All right, where this guy is shooting, you know, next to this other a father and son, you know, at a target shooting thing, and he happens to actually fire over into their target, all right, and the guy goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" And the guy just happens to slip up and say, "Oh, sorry, I thought that was Kennedy." Pretty obvious,
Oh my gosh, how
huh?
obvious could it be? I have never heard that story.
Oh, you haven't? Oh,
No.
okay.
No, what I have heard though is there were Oswalds popping up along the planned parade route, I think like in San Antonio and
Right,
other
a couple of
places.
days before. A
Yeah,
couple days
exactly.
before, there was one near Dealey Plaza. And
Yep.
guess what? He had a bag which he said were there were curtain rods in. You know? I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. You know? So, yes, it's a very, excuse me. So it's yes, it's a very, oh, how about the one with the car? Okay. A guy saying that he wanted to test drive a new car at a Mercury dealer in Dallas. All right. And he test drives his car and they're going about 80 miles an hour. All right. And he goes, well, you know, I just got back from Russia and I expect to come into a lot of money, you know, so I'll be back to purchase this car in cash. All right.
No.
Now, come on. I mean, this is, you know, and he, and here's the problem. Here's the problem. The Warren Commission, if you can believe this, they excused all this because they said, well, that couldn't have been Oswald. Well, come on, that's the point. That's the whole point of the thing. All right? That it wasn't Oswald. Somebody is trying to maneuver an image of Oswald around before the assassination. And so Matt did just a first-rate job on that, you know, in the book. One of the best you're ever going to see any place. Yeah.
I totally agree with you. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, speaking of Oswald, I've often questioned in my mind whether or not he fired a shot, because didn't the FBI give him a nitrate test and he showed up negative that night? And those
Yes.
nitrate tests are pretty accurate. And he allegedly shot three shots at Kennedy and Connally and five shots at Officer Tippit. So how do you come up with eight shots and you're not showing nitrates on your clothing or your hands?
Yeah, there were no nitrates on his cheek. Okay.
Yeah,
All
and
right.
the
And what
rifle.
that does, what that and see and the thing is, Oswald was firing a manual bullet, if you believe the Warren Commission, which I don't. All right. Oswald was firing what they call a manual bolt action scoped rifle. What that means is that you have to get your face right up on the rifle into the scope, and then you have to pull back, all right, pull back the arm of the which opens up the cylinder where you stick the bullet in. So that has to go right into your face. So in other words, the chamber is blowing up right in Oswald's face. And now, how on earth could you not get nitrate traces on your cheek if that was the case? You know, this is a very, very, very serious problem. Along with the other problem, of course, that when they send the rifle to the FBI that night, Sebastian Latona, who is probably the number one fingerprint analyst in America at that time, he examines the rifle. No fingerprints. All right. Then he breaks down the rifle into all of its component parts. Still no fingerprints. Then he takes pictures of all the broken down parts. All right. And then he puts powder on it. Still no fingerprints. All right. So, in other words, here you have an assassin that A did not have any nitrates on his cheek and his fingerprints weren't on the weapon. So, I've always believed, and there's other reasons we can go into if you want, all right, but I've always believed that this exculpates Oswald as shooting Kennedy.
I agree. I wondered though, I mean, since he was an Operation Mongoose, at least had a connection to it with David Ferry, do you think he knew it was going to happen, but he was set up to be the patsy? How do you view that?
I think that once it happened, all right, once it happened, he began to think that, isn't this a pretty wild coincidence? Kennedy gets shot right in front of the building that I'm working at,
Yeah.
and I'm involved with all these anti-Castro Cuban exiles. I'm involved with all these CIA and FBI guys. I'm sitting there, in New Orleans on a busy street, okay, handing out, flyers with 544 Camp Street. And I think that's why he went to his boarding house and got his pistol, okay, because he began to suspect something was going to be wrong, all right. And then he goes to a movie theater, which is a kind of common place where to make spy exchanges. And he begins, and now, I don't know if you've ever been to the Texas Theater in Dallas. That's where he went to. Okay. It's a pretty big theater. It's like 900 seats. All right. And he began to move around the theater like he was looking for somebody who he expected to be in contact with.
Like a Jack Ruby.
Right. Well, maybe, but, and so I suspect that Oswald realized what was happening by that time,
Right.
and then he starts saying, I'm not resisting, he starts screaming, I'm not resisting arrest, because I think he thought that they were going to try and shoot him. All right. And then he says, I screams out the immortal words, I'm just a patsy.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
he doesn't say I'm innocent. He just says, I'm just a patsy. Like he knew that something was happening to him.
Yeah, I got a little family history on this too, and this really always also really bothered me. My uncle owned a tool and die shop on Main Street at the time, and he didn't like Kennedy. And I hate to admit, my uncle was not in favor of his civil rights policies, and that was the reason why. And he didn't get the word that they changed the parade route. He thought they were still going to come down Main Street, and yet the parade route got changed to take Kennedy in front of the book depository, which they slowed down to 14 miles an hour, never should have been that slow by policy. And my uncle called my aunt. He always felt bad about this. He said, "Why hasn't Kennedy come down here? He's supposed to have been here by now. Maybe someone shot the SOB." And he really felt bad because he did not know that Kennedy had been shot yet. And she goes, "Turn on the radio. Turn on the radio." How do you address the changing of the parade route issue, especially with the Dallas police people that were involved?
This is a very, very interesting question, I mean, to put it mildly. All right. First of all, there's a mythology that was set up by the Warren Commission that somehow, once it was decided upon to go to the trademark, all right, for the luncheon, that you had to go through Dealey Plaza in order to get there, which is not true.
No, it's
All right.
not.
Yeah, the House Select Committee on Assassinations said, look, all you have to do is look at a street map of Dallas from that time period, and you'll see that you could have gone an alternative route. You didn't have to go through Dealey Plaza. All right. All right. That's a myth. All right. Second of all, it's against Secret Service regulations to slow a car down to something like 11 and a half miles an hour in a crowd situation. All right. You're not supposed to do that. All right. Also, what made it worse is that there was an incredible lack of manpower on the ground, because what that means is you could not check for open windows, all right, in Dealey Plaza. You're not supposed to have open windows, okay, in a situation like that, because obviously it's a great setup for a sniper. Dealey Plaza, if you've ever been there, and I've
I've
been there
walked it, yeah.
several times, I mean, if I was a sniper, a professional sniper, and I wanted to imagine a really great ambush for a head of state. You could not get very much better than Dealey Plaza, all right? And for very simple reasons, you've got these tall buildings behind. You've got an escape because you have a parking lot right next to you. You have another site in front of you with the overpass. And then you've got the car making these two extreme right turns. And it's a convertible top on top of that. Exactly. All right. You know, so you could not see what I've actually talked to professional hitmen about this, you know, and they say, Jim, we call that in the trade an L-shaped ambush. All right. Because what it is an inverted L. Okay. You got in the upper right, you've got a great spot there in a Deltex building. Over on the left, you've got a great spot at the opposite end of the Texas School Book Depository. And at the top of the L, you've got another great spot on the grassy knoll. So you've got a three-sided ambush. There's no escape from something like that.
Yeah, he wasn't getting out of there alive. Do you believe that shots were fired from all three of those areas you just mentioned?
Yes.
I do, too.
Yes, yeah.
I absolutely do, too. And the people that were on the grassy knoll, do you have any information on who they might have been or who they were connected to?
Well, let's put it this way. There were some very odd Cuban exiles reportedly in Dallas at that particular time. A guy named Bernardo de Torres, who was an infamous Cuban exile, all right, involved with a lot of assassinations and the drug trade. And he was out of JM Wave. He was in the Bay of Pigs, and they got him back out, and he worked out of JM Wave. And there was another guy named Sergio Arcacha Smith, who was in New Orleans and supposedly was in the car with a woman named Rose Sheremy, all right, who Oliver Stone opened up his 1991 film with that, yes, with that story, which what's really a shame, people didn't believe that that was true. It is true. It really happened.
It did happen.
Yeah. All right. They threatened, they were talking about killing Kennedy. They dumped her out of the car. She was in a what they call a heroin withdrawal situation, and they took her up to this hospital, and she predicted Kennedy was going to be killed. Okay, all right. So yes, so those are a couple of the people that we might suspect.
Yeah, interesting. One of the things that I've had mentioned to me quite a bit was the involvement of the Corsican Mafia out of Marseille, France, brought in by the American mafia as contracted by the CIA. That's what I meant by levels removed. Do you attach any significance to the Corsican mafia, Christian David and that group?
Oh, you're talking about the French connection.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, there is a very controversial report that the CIA actually made in 1964. And that is that a guy named John Soutre was reportedly in Fort Worth, Dallas, on the morning of the assassination. And the FBI deported him because he was on the security index. This is the reason. Soutre was part of the OAS, the French secret army organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they were violently opposed to letting Algeria go free. Okay. Algeria had been a French colony across the Mediterranean. And there was a long war going on there for years on end. And the French military did not want them to go free. De Gaulle was the new president, was determined to get rid of this problem. Now, Kennedy, from as far back as 1957, got up in the Senate and said, we should not be backing this French imperial power, okay, to keep control of Algeria. And this was a very famous speech that he gave in the summer of 1957, which if you can, now here's this little known senator from Massachusetts, giving this speech against Eisenhower and Dulles and Nixon, this got 140 columns and editorials throughout the country. It was so controversial, all right, because he was taking on the Republican, administration and this colonial policy. Now, you want to hear the capper? 2-to-1 negative. It was 2-to-1 negative. They were piling on him. So he calls up his father and he says, did I make a mistake? All right. And Joe Kennedy says, you don't know how lucky you are. This thing is only going to get worse and worse and worse. And a year from now, people are going to look back at you like you were some kind of a prophet. And guess what, Dave? That's what happened.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Okay. Because like 8 months later, he's on the cover of Time magazine. All right. And the inside story says, man out front. Okay. So Jean Soutray was reportedly in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at that time. And he was a member of the OAS. And some people suspect that he might have been, in fact, Rob Reiner named him as one of the guys in Dealey Plaza on his special.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too as well. Yeah, Kennedy was so ahead of his time in so many ways. I mean, the thing is, this is kind of a digressing, but when he gave his secret society speech, he nailed deep state and government involvement with what would eventually become social media. I mean, he called it. I mean, he was like 35, 40 years ahead of his time when he talked about how things were going to go. It was just amazing to me. One of the things that bothered me too about this whole thing, okay? You have Jack Ruby, who trafficked women. Jack Ruby, who had prostitution rings, ran drugs. He catered to the cops that were corrupt. They all knew who he was. How the hell does he get in the basement of the Dallas? Who are they keeping out? I mean, I think Adolf Hitler could have shown up and got in that day. And then and then his excuse: why did you shoot Oswald? To spare Mrs. Kennedy the pain of a trial. That doesn't sound like the answer of a mafioso to me.
This is, the way you expressed it there, I couldn't help but giggle. Okay. All right. So here you have the Dallas police in their most, by far, the most high profile case they've ever been involved in. All right. Ever. All right. And they have their suspect, okay, right in their hands. And somehow, this small time bar owner, this burlesque club guy, we're supposed to believe walks right down the main street ramp, okay, with a gun in his hand, with a gun in his hand, okay, rather, excuse me, in his jacket, all right, and then there's two horns that go off, beep, Oswald comes out into the foyer, beep, Ruby jumps forward and he shoots Oswald, one shot, dead, all right. How in God's name could something like that happen? I mean, you've really got to wonder. And then, of course, like you said, oh, I wanted to spare Jackie Kennedy the ordeal of coming back here for a trial. Oh, really? Okay, we're supposed to forget the guy is number one, he's involved in CIA gun running. Number two, he's procurement of all food, drink, and women for the Dallas cops. Number three, he's a low-level gangster. Who you just look through the Warren Commission volumes, all right? And they say things like, look, if you wanted to do a numbers racket in Dallas, Jack Ruby was a guy you went to, all right? So this, and also, like you said, he was also involved in drug running. How on earth can you let a guy, into the basement when you're transferring Oswald? Now, the Warren Commission tried to cover this up by saying he came down the Main Street ramp. That is not true. All right. The guy who was guarding the ramp, a guy named Matthews, all right, took a lie detector test and he passed. Okay. All right. And he swore no, he did not come down the Main Street ramp. The guy in charge of security that day, a guy named Patrick Dean, he drugged himself before he took his lie detector test. He wrote his own questions. And guess what? He still flunked. Okay. All right. Somebody, I don't know if you've ever been there, Dave, but if you, and most people don't know this, Right at the back of that building, that's the Western Union Station. Okay, it's right across the street. So anybody could have gone up to the second floor and like waved, all right? Or they could have gone down to the first floor and opened the door and let Ruby in. Now the House Select Committee, they concluded that's how he got in. He got in through the back door and somebody opened it for him. All right. That's how he got in to shoot Oswald.
Well, then there's a conspiracy right there. And so the Warren Commission
Exactly.
conclusion that there was no conspiracy is wrong from what they just said.
Right. Exactly. Ruby had help getting in there that day, and that predates some kind of a police conspiracy, okay, to shoot Oswald.
Yeah, that just never made any sense to me. And then we get into, and I'll tell you, I think what really got YouTube on me, courtesy of the CIA, was, the day before the assassination, I ran the story of Dorothy Kilgallen, and she said she was going to blow the cover off of the Ruby Oswald situation, and then she ends up mysteriously dead, the same way Marilyn Monroe was I think killed. And you know, with the feeling I got when I listened to her words is that she thought Ruby was coerced to kill Oswald. He wasn't given a choice by the mafia. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I know as much as I've read several books on this. Okay, in case your listeners don't know, Dorothy Kilgallen was a very high-profile journalist who not only did a very well-read column, I think it was syndicated to something like 158 newspapers throughout America, but she was also a guest on this highly rated TV show, What's My Line, all right, which was on weekend nights, all right. And so it had a pretty big audience. And then she also had a radio show in New York with her husband, Richard Colmar, which had another very highly rated audience. So she, there was there, I don't think there's any doubt. She was the most popular journalist in America who actually pushed this whole angle about,
Exactly.
no, I don't buy the Warren Commission. I'm not buying this stuff. I don't believe Oswald was by himself. I don't believe that Ruby didn't have help getting in there. And she actually, and I don't know how she did this, and nobody really knows how she did this. She actually got Ruby's testimony and published it in her newspaper before it was published by the Warren Commission. Now, why is that important? Let me tell you why it's important. The Warren Commission, there was an absolute blackout. Now, can you imagine that this happening today? Here you have John F. Kennedy killed at high noon with 300 witnesses in Dealey Plaza, all right? And there's an inquest into his hearing, and the public is not allowed to see it, and the newspapers don't scream, you know, that this is undemocratic. You know, this is our president. We want to hear these hearings. The public has a right to this. Well, they were closed. This is really hard to believe. There were 500 witnesses. The only witness who demanded that his hearing be open or else he wasn't going to appear was Mark Lane. He's the only guy who screamed about this. Says, no, the American public has the right to hear this. All right? All right. And so there's a blackout about this. Not only that, they didn't even issue a schedule for the next day who we're going to be talking to. They didn't even do that. So you didn't know who was going to testify. Well, Dorothy Kilgallen got Jack Ruby's testimony and published it. I think their paper was a New York Journal American and published it over 3 days in that newspaper. All right. Now, to put it mildly, the FBI and Warren Commission did not like this. Okay. And so then they visited her and they wanted to find out, where the hell did you get this? All right. And she said, I can't give up my source. You know, like any good newspaper person, I can't give up my source. And so then she went to New Orleans about a month or two before she died. All right. And nobody really knows what she was doing there. She could have been talking to any amount of people because Oswald spent that summer doing some very strange things in New Orleans. All right. And then she told her hairdresser I'm going to go back. All right. But I don't want you to come with me. I don't want anybody to come with me. All right. And then when she returned from that second visit, very shortly after that, she turns up dead. Barbiturate poisoning. And everybody knew that she'd never slept in that bedroom where her body was found.
Exactly.
She slept on the fifth floor, not the third floor. All right. And there was a book on her bed that she had already read. All right. And then there was a glass on her desk table. All right. That had some traces of barbiturates in it, but the coroner's office hid a trace of the third drug that was in there. I think it was called Twinol. And Twinol is fatal. All right. So most people believe who studied that in all likelihood, this was not an accident and she did not take her own life. Okay. She was probably poisoned.
Yeah, that's what I believe too. I think that's the smartest conclusion to come to. What would she have learned from Ruby? And
Well, that's a great question because she never revealed. She had two conferences with Ruby. All right. One was a very brief one, like 2 or 3 minutes, and the other one was about 5 minutes long. All right. And they were alone that second one. Okay. And she carried these papers with her. All right. That she had notes taken, et cetera, you know, and those very mysteriously were gone, okay, when they found her body, you know. So this is another point that makes most people think that she was not killed by accident, that somebody took her life, and B, this might have been the motive, you know, for doing so. But just understand, see, this is 65. At this time and point in time, there is no big hubbub about the Kennedy assassination. The public is still accepting the Warren report.
Yes.
All right. If she had started in on this, okay, with whatever information she got from either Ruby or her trips to New Orleans, with the reach that she had, it would have created, you know, something like a mini firestorm on the case, which was not going to erupt until later the next year.
Yeah, it's a shame in some way she didn't live to publish what I think she knew. You know, and here's what I mean by that. I've gotten consistent reports through the years that Ruby and Oswald knew each other. Do you believe that?
Yes, I do. In fact, if you can believe it, the Warren Commission wrote up a couple reports on this. Okay, that there's a distinct possibility because both men were involved with the Cuban Exile Underground,
Yes.
all right, that this would be a focus to concentrate on if Oswald and Ruby had ever met each other. That's probably how they did it, all right. And there are three or four witnesses, if you go through the whole, you know, which almost nobody ever does, the 26 volumes of the Warren Commission, who did put them together. Of course, they were anything like that was disregarded by the Warren report.
No, I know that, you know, it's amazing to me too. And to kind of just jump a track here for a second, Jim Garrison, I can't believe he escaped all his revelations unharmed, because you know they were offing witnesses left and right, and so and I know that Oliver Stone gave a lot of credence to Jim Garrison's work. He gave him front and center on the movie he did in 91. And I just, how do you think Jim Garrison got away with all his revelations and survived? Do you think he was too high profile to kill?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's the reason. So what they did is they did plan B, you know, with Garrison. They discredited him.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. You know, if you don't assassinate somebody, the next best thing is discredit him. And they did a really great job. You know, as much as I don't like what they did, you know, did a very efficient job. You know, this guy's not worth listening to. You know, he's just a clown. Okay, don't take anything that he says seriously. They even sabotaged the trial, okay, the
Yes.
trial of Clay Shaw, all right, and so it took a while, a long time, okay, for that to for the public to say, wait a minute, maybe there was something there. All right, and so when Garrison issued his book, which I believe in 1989, all right, that sold about 40,000 copies in hardcover. All right, and then when Oliver Stone made his film, his book became the number one bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. And of course, the movie was a hit. It's, by the way, especially abroad. Okay. It did okay in the United States, but it was a very big hit abroad. All right. And I think, I'm not sure about this, but I think if you take the total from domestic and foreign rentals, what they call theatrical rentals, I think that's the biggest hit Oliver ever had.
I just was overwhelmed by the public's response in 91 when the movie came out, and I saw it 3 times. And I'd walk out and I'd hear conversations. This is anecdotal, but it was conversations that basically said, I didn't know this, and the people should know this. And at one time, I remember in the 90s, there was a poll taken, and over 90% of the people in the country at that time came to believe Kennedy was killed as a result of a conspiracy. So Oliver really had a big role in this, huge role,
Yes.
I think, in turning the public opinion. But here's another thing that really bothered me, Jim, too. In 1977, you had a congressional investigation called the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and they came to the conclusion, largely based on a radio stuck in the on position from a motorcycle, that Kennedy was killed as a result of a conspiracy. Why is it today we had a report 13 years after the Warren Commission was released? Why is it the Warren Commission gets the credibility and the House Select Commission gets nothing in the media, and yet they had the best evidence of a conspiracy?
That's another very good question, Dave. In fact, I'd be willing to wager half the people in the country don't even know that. All right. That in 1979, the House Select Committee issued a report concluding there was a 95% possibility of a conspiracy. And now 95% is pretty good. Okay.
Yeah,
Now,
I agree.
by two sets of acoustical professionals, that there was at the very least a fourth shot. And of course, if there's a fourth shot, it can't be Oswald, But I have to say this: the media hangs on to the Warren Commission report, no matter what the heck happens.
I know.
We're supposed to believe this discredited, the late Cyril Wecht, who was one of the original critics of the Warren Commission report, always said when he was on television, they should take those 26 volumes out of the nonfiction area of the library and put them right
Yeah.
next to Hans Christian Andersen and Grimm's Fairy Tales in the fiction part of the library. All right.
I
And
know.
that is where they belong, you know?
I know. There's so much here that we're not even gonna have time to get to. But the one thing that I look at today as a factor of the Warren Commission, regardless of people's feelings about Donald Trump, yay or nay, it's clear that lawfare is in effect for an ex-president being tried on nonsense, with prosecutors breaking the law themselves left and right. I mean, now it was revealed Alvin Bragg destroyed relevant evidence that could be exculpatory for Trump in the hush money trial. That came out, I believe, Friday, and came out in the course of trial where a paralegal for Alvin Bragg admitted we destroyed files. I'm worried that if they don't get Trump out through lawfare, I'm concerned that he could be the victim of an assassination. Has that thought occurred to you?
No, actually, I have to say I haven't thought of that. I would think that would just be so obvious. And so, I mean, come on. How far are you going to go? I mean,
Yeah.
that's really a brazen kind of thing to even think about, you know?
Let me interject this because maybe this will change your thinking. I think it's because of researchers like you that have come along and shed so much light. I don't think they can get away with a Kennedy-style assassination today. And here's why I believe this. I have a broadcast partner that I do a weekly show with. His name is Doug Thornton. He's a former DHS supervisor. He said when he was in the Homeland Security Department, they had meetings about presidential protection and security with Secret Service. And he said that a lot of times what they talk about is the fact that you won't see a Kennedy assassination. You'll see a weapon of mass destruction, like a dirty bomb or something. And the target really was the assassinated candidate for office or whoever, or the president. He'll just be the victim of unfortunate circumstances of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's what DHS talked about. And I got it from the horse's mouth who sat in these meetings. So
Well,
I think,
that's really interesting that
yeah.
they actually thought of that as
Yeah.
a thought. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Doug is, we've been doing this show together now. It's called the Doug and Dave Intel Report. We've done the show together now for about 3.5 years. And Doug discussed this right on the air. He has no love for Biden, and he left Homeland Security in a huff because of the stuff they were doing. So he doesn't hold back. He can't reveal classified information, but this wasn't classified. And I think that makes the most sense. But I think you deserve a lot of credit for this because I think they can't get away with it.
Well, that would be an indication that they don't think they can get away with another one of those. They have to disguise it in a clever way, you know?
Yeah, just to think though that they would kill. I know a Pakistani leader was one time allegedly brought down in an airliner, and they killed 150 people just to get to him. So I don't think this is too far fetched. And by the way, the CIA got credit for doing that. I don't think that's too far fetched, but I think that you deserve a lot of credit. But we barely touched the surface here, and I want to get back to your book for a second. But I'm going to have you back on. There's so much we haven't got to. I had a list of questions that your publicist gave me. We got a lot of those. I had my questions here, and you know what? We barely scratched the surface. But I think it's important because, see, if John Kennedy was killed, and Cyril Weck said this, he said if John Kennedy's killed as a result of the conspiracy, it's a coup d'état that disenfranchised the American voter. And who he's
Yes.
for doesn't matter. If a president wants to go his own way and please the people, let's just take him out. And that's what they did with John Kennedy, in my opinion. And I think this is why that we keep this alive. And I think also talking about it protects future presidents in the way I just described.
I agree. I agree.
And
So,
it's,
what are we going to do? A 10-parter,
we're going to do a, we're going to do a 15-parter. Well, anyway, hold up your book again, because I've got that
Okay.
screen off
There you go.
my system here. I want people to really go for this. Jim D, James on the title, James D. Eugenio, and he wrote the JFK assassination chokehold. Fantastic that you're still on this, because you are saving lives, Jim, and I really want to give you credit. You're saving lives of the next president, because they got to think, hey, in an era now where everything is videotaped, and they wasn't then in 63, and they really didn't get away with it. It's amazing, isn't it? So people can get the book on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, right? And
Right,
online.
right.
Listen, this is just so fantastic. And I have to tell you, of all the things I cover, this is my favorite to cover because it hit me the hardest. When I went back and I looked at Kennedy, and he wasn't a perfect man, but he was a darn good president. I mean, the Cuban Missile Crisis, he didn't want in Vietnam. He would have saved 58,000 American lives and millions of Vietnamese lives. I mean, he really, I think, had the interest of humanity at best heart.
Let's not forget, he wouldn't go into Laos either.
Oh, I
They
know.
wanted him to
I
go
know.
into Laos. All right.
Well, I'm sure that upset Richard Nixon too, and that's another story for another time. Back in the Golden Triangle days with Eisenhower. Eisenhower should have dumped him going into that second election.
I totally agree.
He should have. But Jim, I really appreciate you being on here. Do you have any way that people can follow you besides by the book?
Yeah, there's I have a website called kennedysandking.com.
That's
All
awesome.
right. And that has reviews, it has articles, it has interviews, etc. And we try and keep it up to date with the most current information.
Yeah, it just absolutely is stunning that this still applies to today. And a lot of people will say, well, it's a history lesson. Folks, it is not. I'm telling
No,
you right now,
it's not
if
a
Donald
history
Trump
lesson.
survives these trials, I don't think the Democrats can cheat enough to beat him. And I think his life's in jeopardy, because every intelligence agency is against him, Jim. That's all I need to say. When they came out with a Hunter Biden crap and defended him the way they did, and we know they all lied about it now, all 17 agencies, they are against Donald Trump. And I could see history repeating itself. And that's why your work is among many other reasons why it's so important. But Jim, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been fascinating. I'll be back in touch, because we need to do a follow-up to get to some of the questions I didn't touch.
Okay, thank you so much for having me, Dave. It was very nice.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure, Jim. Thank you.